Are we there yet? We want to know, but do we have to ask? Welcome. It's Money Talk, the Annex Wealth Management Show. Glad you're here in the next hour. Great sample of what we do on behalf of our clients. In fact, if you're not a client yet and you're asking, is Annex the right fit for me? We've got five questions to ask. We want the fit to be right. Ask Annex is coming up toward the end of the show. How healthy is your 401k? You know, there's not a rating agency for 401ks, but we've got a retirement plan services department. Tom Parks heads that up, and he is going to talk about what you want to watch for. I'm Danny Clayton in the studio with Dr. Brian Jacobson, chief economist. Hey, Brian.
Hey, it's good to be here.
Dave Sponauer, president and CEO, Annex Wealth Management.
Yeah, that's funny. Are we there yet? You remember when we were growing up, of course, and we were on a long trip, and the kids in the back, Brian, would always say, are we there yet? And trust me, you didn't want my dad to pull the Buick over. I assure you of that. But that is a question that we've been getting asked a lot.
It is, yeah. When I was the youngest of three, and so I always had to sit in the middle, and I'm sure I was the first one asking that question. So I should probably extend a heartfelt apology to my parents publicly here. But it is something investors have been asking about with rate cuts. Are we there yet? And I think we got a pretty good answer to that this past week. We know that over the last few weeks, we've gotten some data that suggested that inflation picked up again in January and February. Growth has stayed pretty good. Chair Powell came out during his press conference and effectively said that he's ready, willing, and able to start cutting rates, but not yet.
Yeah, and not yet. That is really the key, of course. And we've seen these inflation reports January and February. He said that was an anomaly, and that may not really be what's going on. But our experience is we can see a resurgence in inflation. And so we look at dot plots. Mm-hmm. And I know we throw that term around. And I wanted to explain it because we had one of our listeners ask to explain the dot plots. Sure. And really, there are a number of Fed governors, 12 of them, the regional banks around the country, as well as the seven that are in Washington, D.C. So there's 19 of these guys and gals who guess what they think rates are going to be like over the next 3 years. And that's what we're basing this on.
That's correct. And Governor Waller, so he's in Washington, D.C. on that board where he came out with a speech and kind of explained the shifts in those dot plots and how he interpreted it. And really what we saw is that guess for where the federal funds rate will be by the end of 2024. So when they're making these guesses, it's always what is it as of the end of the year. So it never tells us sort of when, which month, which meeting are they expecting to cut. But the median, so if you look at those 19, right, so you have half of them above, half of them below, is still projecting three cuts for this year. But two of those dots kind of shifted up a little bit in the sense that maybe they think two might be more appropriate. Now, Governor Waller, he's in the camp of probably just one and done for 2024 and wait until 2025 to do some cuts. Earlier this week, we also had a speech from Raphael Bostic of the Atlanta Federal Reserve, and he said one should be good enough. So there are some who are saying, you know, let's do one. There are others who are saying we could probably squeeze in four. So there is a big difference of opinion, and those dot plots really help paint that picture for what that difference of opinion is.
And that is really good. But of course, they are human beings as well, and they don't know what they don't know, and they are looking backwards. And what I mean by what they don't know, we're going to see an effect to the economy by what happened in Baltimore with the bridge. That is a port that exports a lot of goods, and that could have an effect on GDP, could have an effect on exports, and therefore the economy and inflation.
That's very true. And it gets to one of these things where it seems like every single quarter, there's something that happens where if the Federal Reserve or if investors wanted to, they could look at the data and say, well, we will just dismiss that because there was, you know, a port that shut down or there was some seasonal adjustment. There was bad weather or something. There's always a reason to ignore the data. But I do think we have to pay attention to that with the port, especially. That is the largest one for exporting and importing automobiles and light trucks for the United States, also for coal. You also have sugar going through there. Now, these are things, it's not like everyday purchases, I mean, except for maybe sugar, right? That these aren't everyday purchases.
I'm pretty good at that.
But it can still affect inflation and, as you point out, GDP as well. Automobile manufacturing, what is this going to do in terms of our ability to export vehicles through that? It's going to have a differential impact depending on the company. So a company like Volkswagen, their port was in a place where it might not be affected, whereas others like Chevrolet, other GM products, maybe Ford, they're more inland, and so they could be affected, and it will likely show up in the GDP numbers.
And that's the reason why we want to bring this up, because it affects real-world people. It affects people in Main Street every single day, and that's why we spend a lot of time talking about these things. So if interest rates go as expected, we're at about 5.5% and headed lower. Mm-hmm. So that means what should you do, for example, in your bond portfolio? Getting 5% plus in money markets is probably not going to be there forever. There's some things that people can do. I know that what we're doing here and our investment team, and that's probably the most relevant thing to talk about.
It really is. It's one of the biggest questions we get. In fact, one of the last questions that we got before the holiday was about, I have a certificate of deposit maturing. What should I do with this? What are my different options? And so what we did is we sat down and we looked at, consider this, for certificates of deposit, those are taxable at the federal and at the state level. Or do you buy a treasury security with the same maturity? Say it's a three-year CD or a three-year treasury bill. If it's a treasury bill, it's taxable at the federal, but not the state level. So really comparing those after-tax yields for that holding period led us to basically make the recommendation is that the treasury bill just makes a little bit more sense. But let's take a step back, and does it make sense to keep it in a treasury bill, right? Do you need that type of liquidity? Is it for cash management? Or is this part of your nest egg, something that you're hoping to grow over a longer period of time? In which case, why not consider allocating maybe even to equities, preferred stock, convertible bonds? There's a whole universe out there. Don't just narrowly focus on where can I get the highest yield on these short-term fixed income securities. Kind of take a picture or take the look at the whole picture for your financial situation.
And you look at, for example, the continuum. They could be, as you said, treasuries. They could be municipals. They could be investment grade, high yield, so on and so forth. And that's the reason why we do a deep dive. You know, sometimes we spend a lot of time talking about equities, but fixed income should be part of this conversation right now. And it goes to getting a wealth metric. If you are new to us and if you want to experience that, it is a really good program to go in. And we do that as an offering to people who call us.
Dave Swano, President, CEO, Annex Wealth Management. Brian Jacobson, our Chief Economist. That is our Week in Review, always available on demand at the top of the hour, wherever you get your podcasts, also the Axiom newsletter. This is Money Talk, the Annex Wealth Management Show, Saturday, March 30th. Still to come, 5 easy questions to see if Annex is a good fit for you and your family. We're going to be right back on 620 WTMJ. Welcome back. Hey, by the way, if you're one of the thousands of people that we work with on their 401ks, how about considering the full suite of our services, investment, retirement, tax, and estate planning? And the same thing, if you got a new job in 2024, you got a 401k sitting around from your previous employer, we can help there. In the studio, Dr. Brian Jacobson, Chief Economist, Annex Wealth Management. Dave Spano is our President and CEO.
You know, in our business, Brian, we have lots of acronyms. And for a long time, we had TINA, FOMO. And that's not my Italian cousin. TINA, there is no alternative. And FOMO, fear of missing out. But fear of missing out is really coming back into play. We saw a bunch of debuts this week from securities, and it really caught a lot of attention.
It did, yeah. So probably the biggest one was from former President Trump, his social media company, as far as what is it, Truth Social?
Truth Social, right, and trading under DJT.
I know, you have to love that ticker, right, as far as his initials
there.
Yeah, that's true. Yeah, you don't have to love it. I'm not telling you must, but it really, a lot of people, are they buying this because they think that there's actually some great growth prospects, or are they doing it because they think it's what John Maynard Keynes years ago would have said, the greater fool theory, there's some other fool out there who's willing to buy it from you because here's a company that isn't even profitable. If you kind of do the math, they'd have to have like 30% profit margins and get to around like $2 billion in revenue over the course of the next year to justify the valuations to make it comparable to other social media companies.
But we've seen this in other meme stocks. You remember there were all the rockets and all of those things that would used to go out. I mean, we saw this before. This is not something new.
That's true. And actually, I think one of the funny things is how Reddit, they were almost the epicenter for how these meme stocks really became meme stocks. They went public and their stock did quite well, lots of volatility there, but it's somewhat poetic that the company that was almost at the center of meme stock mania, that they've now become a type of meme stock. Yet we also got earnings numbers from GameStop, which was one of those companies that was caught up in it, and their shares fell dramatically just because the revenues weren't there. So eventually, fundamentals do matter. And I think that's the tricky thing is, at what point do you jump off of that fear of missing out train, get out of that mindset? Because eventually the fundamentals will come back to perhaps bite you.
And here, okay, Professor, I've got a good one. This is not anything new, right? The tulip mania, I think our listeners might want to know about that.
Yeah, so the tulip bulb mania, where that was one of the first bubbles that you had. Actually, it was also South Sea Company, all sorts of different bubbles that formed in the past. But the tulip bulb one was really based upon the idea that there were these bulbs for tulips, and they were traded on an exchange, and they just became very fashionable to buy. People started bragging about them. There were these exotic ones, and eventually it really all began to fall apart. Right. You know, that bubble began to wither.
And that is exactly why you talk about fundamentals and the work that we do, and it's very important. And our investment team goes through and does a deep dive, and I think that's important if you want to hire a financial advisor, an advisory team, that they do the work.
Hey, folks, what are five questions to ask to see if Annex Wealth Management is the right fit for you? That's next. This is Money Talk, the Annex Wealth Management show on 620 WTMJ. Know the difference with Annex Wealth Management. Brandon Arps, a wealth manager at Annex Wealth Management, is back. Hey, Brandon.
Danny, how are you?
Good, thanks. Folks, if you're a regular listener, you might be one of four types. You're a client of Annex Wealth Management, and if that's the case, thank you. The second is working with somebody else, but you're gleaning valuable information from this show. Third, maybe a do-it-yourselfer. The fourth is someone who doesn't work with anybody. Maybe you don't do any planning at all. You're going to figure it out later. The relationship between Annex and our clients is a two-way street. We're going to ask just as many questions of you because we need to know. Needs to be a great fit on both sides. Brandon and I are going to run through a five-point list of questions when it comes to deciding if working with Annex Wealth Management is the correct move. Brandon, you've been doing this for a while. You've talked to a lot of clients. I think you'll be pretty good at this.
Yeah, hopefully.
Number one question. Do you need help with financial planning or are you just looking for stock tips?
So two very different things. Financial planning to us is really the foundation to our commitment to comprehensive wealth management. At Annex, we start with a financial plan, then we layer on a tax plan, understand the type of investments that are appropriate, and then spend time on your estate plan. So investments is part of the conversation with a financial plan, but it's not all of the conversation. So different planning topics happen at different times of life and are all worth your time, consideration, and understanding. So you think about things like Roth versus pre-tax 401k contributions, marriage, kids, insurances, college savings plans, retirement, Social Security, Medicare. All of these are different stages, and they're definitely worth your time and consideration.
You ever find that people come in initially and they just think it's about investments?
100%. Yeah, there's some do-it-yourselfers that are out there. The point is that you don't need a financial planner to tell you what the next Apple or NVIDIA will be, but it does help to have the Annex investment team and their in-house collective expertise to lean on for that side of the equation.
Second question to ask yourself to see if we're a good fit. Are you ready to follow advice or do you want to just hear what you want to hear?
Yeah, this is an important one. We're ready to meet you on all different levels and prepare to deliver top-tier guidance. So usually we need you to help us with some of the heavy lifting. We're not going to try to overwhelm you. And then we're also going to try to help as much as possible along the way. On the other side, we meet with folks that take pride in implementing their own strategies and use us to ensure that their interpretation of planning topics is on track. One tip, though, be open to planning advice. Even if it's different from what you think is right, get a few more eyeballs and opinions on things.
We're with Brandon Arps, wealth manager at Annex Wealth Management, a list of five questions to ask yourself because working with an advisor has to be a two-way street. Number three, do you have the discipline to stay the course? We've seen that in the last couple of years.
We sure have. 2018, negative 20%, COVID, negative 34%. 2022, inflation and interest rate hikes pushed the market down 25%. We know what bear markets feel like again. Sticking with the plan, making slight adjustments, understanding risk levels, having a structured investment plan to begin with is extremely important when panic sets into markets. Money is very emotional, and if you're not capable of controlling your emotions and have been guilty of panic selling, for instance, you may want to consider partnering with a wealth manager who can help you from becoming your own worst enemy.
Number four, do you have a good understanding of risk? And risk is defined in a couple of different ways.
Yeah, it sure is. And this is kind of an extension of having that discipline to stay the course. So as a wealth manager, the task of understanding a client's risk tolerance is of the utmost importance. We have software that allows us to dive deep into this conversation, tailored to your current allocation, and talk about how your portfolio would perform in troublesome times like the financial crisis, COVID, 2022, for instance, if you're not finding out how risky your allocation is until after we're riding a wave down, or you're missing out on the way up, which is equally important, it needs to be part of your conversation moving forward. We want to educate our clients and listeners on where the risks are in your investments, how we mitigate risk through the use of stocks, bonds, cash, and especially diversification. Most people think they understand risk, and that can be dangerous, especially if you don't have the discipline we touched on earlier.
Here's the loaded question. That's number five. To what extent would access to the knowledge, the technology of Annex Wealth Management improve your financial life versus doing it yourself?
This is a big point. You know, I kind of look at when I started my career 10, 15 years ago, a lot of the industry was paper driven. And I think of the huge binder filled with a financial plan our clients would take home and stick in the file cabinet. But really, boy, have things changed. And all of this is absolutely to the benefit of the client. I just think about the systems we use on a daily basis. So financial planning software, budgeting software, tax planning software. I think we have two or three separate systems for taxes alone. Social Security maximization software, investment risk, performance reporting, trading, compliance, the list goes on and on. And the level of sophistication of the software we have is not always available to a retail or do-it-yourself investor. My advice, come in, kick the tires a little bit, and let us demonstrate our capabilities, and it won't cost a thing.
Brandon Arps, Wealth Manager at Annex Wealth Management. Thank you.
You're welcome, Dan.
Before we break for news, let's talk about locations. We're making it easy to meet with us. How about Brookfield, our brand new location? Really nice. They're also in Lake Country, Mequon, Appleton, downtown Milwaukee, inside the Pfister, Madison, Naples, Florida, Libertyville, Illinois, or AnnexWealth.com. Bottom of the hour, let's go to the WTMJ Breaking News Center. Back on the show, and it's time for Ask Annex. As always, get a question for us. Head to the website, AnnexWealth.com. Look for the Ask tab. We answer everybody's questions, client or not. And if we can help for investment and retirement planning, tax planning, and estate planning as a fee-only fiduciary, take us up on that offer and click that Get Started button. In the studio, Matt Morsey, Investment Team Manager, CFP at Annex. Hey.
Hey, Danny.
And we got Fred Coleman, CFP and a Wealth Manager. Hello, Fred.
Hey, Danny.
Question number one on Ask Annex today, tax prep time. How long do I hold on to previous year's paperwork? I've got 10 years worth.
Wow, that's a long time. I actually went to the IRS website to figure this out. They have a long list of time frames and different what-if scenarios, but they say anywhere between 3 and 7 years, depending on your situation. So 10 years, you're well over that. In my opinion, you should just keep them indefinitely. You never know what's going to happen, whether that's just keeping a record at home, a safe spot with all your records, or nowadays you can keep them safely stored electronically. Better safe than sorry. I think the 10 years is a good time frame. Me, myself personally, I keep mine indefinitely.
Matt, how long do you have?
I think we got about 5 years right now.
All right. Next up on Ask Annex. My HSA is invested four different ways, two individual stocks, two ETFs. In order to use those funds for bills, I need to sell them within the HSA. Is there a best way to pick what to sell?
Yeah, I think it's a good question, and how I would look at it is starting with the end in mind. So you need to take a distribution out, figure out how much that is, what are you going to have left over at that point afterwards, and how would you want to be allocated at that point? Do you still want the single stocks? Do you want the ETFs, a mix of them? But that's how I would do it. You can certainly easily sell part of all of it if you like the allocation that you had today. Personally, I'm not a huge fan of using individual stocks within an HSA. For me, there's a specific goal to that money, and I want to maximize my chance of getting to that goal with the least amount of risk possible. So I'm going to try to take some of that risk out of it by trying to pick individual stocks in that method. To me, that's more of like a play account type of thing, or if you've got someone who's professionally managing those individual equities, that's one thing. But within an HSA, when I'm thinking from a time horizon standpoint, having a well-diversified portfolio is how I would go. But if you want to keep the individual stocks, that's certainly up to you. But keep the end in mind of how you'd want that portfolio at the end of the day once you take that distribution out.
One thing to also keep in mind is just that receipt method. Maybe now's not the right time that you want to sell. You can't think of the perfect stock to sell in this situation. Well, you don't necessarily have to. You can always pay out of pocket and reimburse at a different time. So if there's a better time to sell in the future, you can sell it then and then reimburse yourself with the cash.
Next up on Ask Annex, I've been waiting for this one. My know-it-all uncle said, my husband and I are house rich but cash poor. We're contributing to our retirement plans, but we do have a large home with a decent-sized mortgage. My husband is 40. I'm 38. Are we atypical?
Yeah, the first thing I thought of, Danny, you know, was you. I thought of you and at a barbecue, you know, talking to some of your younger nieces and nephews, telling them this. But yeah, this is pretty typical. But also around this age is when we start to see things change. Usually between that 35 to 45 range is when people turn that corner when it comes to wealth building. And I think it's because of a lot of factors. Your kids are starting to get older. You've kind of established a lifestyle. You know, you're in your career. You're starting to get promotions. And now you're starting to see that saving and investing that you've been doing since you started your career, you're starting to see those account values pass up the value of your home. This also assumes that you're not going to purchase a bigger home, because if you continue to do that, that does slow down the wealth building process. In that case, likely your home will always be your largest asset. One thing you can't do is out-invest a lifestyle.
Yeah, I think one thing to look at, and hopefully that you were able to refinance or you bought when interest rates are really low from a home perspective and you have those rates locked in, because as you get older, you know, you start to get to a spot here too where your monthly payment is largely staying the same other than maybe insurance changes over time, property tax changes. But the part that's actually going towards your house itself is level if you have a fixed rate mortgage. So as you do that, like you said, you have an income increases over the course of time. Your house is becoming a smaller and smaller portion of what your monthly spending is, and because a lot easier to not be house rich, cash poor, because you are able to build up all those other things because less and less of your money is going towards that house. But it is extremely common, especially as you're younger, you know, where your house is the largest part of what you have. It's the largest expense that you have every single month. It really dominates what you do. But yeah, over the course of time, you're able to work out of that if you don't continually upsize as you go.
Can we sneak one more in?
Sure.
Okay, here we go. I like this. Single stock ETF. Why?
Yeah, that one made me laugh. There's no shortage of new and unique ways to invest, or, you know, more likely I would say speculate. You know, single stock ETF is really an ETF that's just tracking a single stock by itself. Probably wonder, why would you have an ETF that tracks a single stock? You could just buy the single stock. Well, the idea is that a lot of these have leverage built into them. So instead of getting, pick a company and whatever that return is going to be, maybe it's 1.5 times or 2 times that performance, both on the up and the down. So you're getting leverage on it without having to open up a margin account. The other reason for it is that you could short stock that way much more easily. So shorting stock is selling stock that you don't own, hoping that the price goes lower and you're going to be able to buy it back later. Again, in order to do that, you need margin. So you need a brokerage account to do that, and they need to approve you to be able to do those types of trades. And they are very risky. One of the issues with margin is that you potentially could lose more money than what you invested into it, because if it moves in the opposite direction, you get to a spot where the loan you took out onto it and the change of the price gets you into a spot where you're underwater. By having a single stock ETF, you can both have either the leverage on the way up or the way down, but shorting stock without being able to lose as much or more than you put in, because if the price goes down, it just goes down. You could sell out of it at that point in time. So there are some benefits to it from a risk management standpoint, but ultimately it's more speculation than it is investing in either situation.
Matt Morrissey, investment team manager. Thanks.
Thank you.
Fred Coleman, wealth manager at Annex Wealth Management. Thank you.
Thanks, Danny.
That is Ask Annex. This is Money Talk, the Annex Wealth Management show on 620 WTMJ. Know the difference with Annex Wealth Management with Tom Parks, Director of Retirement Plan Services. Annex, welcome back.
Thanks for having me, Danny.
Big fan of 401ks here. They can be humble. They can be lovable. How do you know if your particular 401k is good or bad? They're not all the same. Tom, I love our company 401k. It's pretty darn good, but I'd expect that.
I think it is too, Danny.
What about yours, folks? With 70 million Americans invested in 401ks, it's likely not all are all-stars. The problem? There's really no place for regular investors to go these days to see how their 401k compares to other plans. So it's harder to figure out how your 401k stacks up on things like size of matching contributions, quality of investment choices, fees, plan perks. Why is there no rating system?
Well, there used to be, Danny. There was this company called Brightscope that did rate 401k plans, but I think it's very difficult to rate a plan just because of all of the variables involved in it. So it's really something you got to do your homework on.
That leaves 401k research up to the consumer, and that's fine. But where do you start? Tommy, what's the best starting point?
Well, start by saving, for sure. but start with the plan that you're in and start asking questions. Collect the information that you have about the highlights of the plan. How does it work? What are the investments? And then from there, you can kind of start building a picture of how good is this thing as compared to some others you might have been in before.
Is the first thing that people look at the match?
That is the number one question that we get, Danny. When we're working with people, people always say, how much do I have to put in to get the match? I don't even know what the second question is because it's not even close. So yeah, for sure, that's something that you want to look at. But don't hang your hat on that completely as the end all and be all of whether it's a good plan or not.
And don't bail, folks, if it's skimpy or even non-existent for the match.
No, for sure. There's still 401ks have lots of great qualities without regard to whether there is a match involved, for sure.
How about investment choices? And I still think most of them, your eyes will cross. There's many, many investment choices.
Yeah, and sometimes this is one of those cases where more does not necessarily equal better. I think of going to a restaurant where you open up the menu and there are like 78 things to choose from. I'm like, oh my gosh, what am I supposed to do with this? And you can have a similar experience with 401k plans. So there are minimum requirements for categories being represented. For the most part, I think 401k plans, if you're in one, you're going to have access to the kind of investments that you need, but do not assume that more is better, I would say.
Where are you with index funds and 401ks?
Index funds are more and more kind of a standard in 401ks. There's a question of whether it's just the S&P 500, for example, or if they're going to expand it to other asset classes. We're big fans at Annex of including those in the lineup as part of a broad, diversified lineup. The key thing, though, I know we're going to talk about fees in a second, is that you got to start paying attention to the idea of an index fund is that you have a low-cost option. In some of these plans, you look at the thing and you're like, wait a second, this looks like it costs a little more than it should. So you do have to pay attention.
Tom Parks, Director of Retirement Plan Services at Annex Wealth Management, asking, do you have a good or a bad 401k? Best 401k accounts keep costs down. Is that through things like index funds?
Yeah, it's a lot of factors. There's administration, the advisory services, the investments themselves. And when it comes to the investments, there is an element, and actually I would say all of these services, of you get what you pay for. But obviously there are limits to that philosophy. So the key thing in this whole discussion, Danny, is it is complicated. There are lots of layers that you're going to have to sift through to get this right.
Talk a little bit about vesting. Is that in every single plan?
Not necessarily. Just think of vesting as this. You know, while you're in the plan, vesting doesn't matter. Vesting matters when you leave. And basically, it translates into how much of the money do I get to take with me? All of it or less. All the money that you put in is always 100% vested because it's your money. Money that you get from the company may be subject to, after this many years, you get to take this much, and the longer you stay, the more you take with, but not necessarily always. It's, again, plan by plan.
Let's talk about 401k fees, because nothing is free.
That is correct, Danny. Anytime I talk to someone who's like, oh no, actually we don't have any fees on our plan, I'm like, oh boy, you probably have really higher fees than average. So, you know, I've kind of alluded to the different services that are available, lots of fingers in the pot in a 401k plan to keep them compliant, to keep them running, and to do the annual non-discrimination testing, all the stuff that most people don't have to think about in their plan. So you need to look. There is a required notice called the 404A5 participant disclosure. It is required to be distributed on an annual basis. It doesn't get into the weeds, but it does give you the broad idea of what your plan costs.
And if you haven't curled up with that in front of a crackling fireplace, you haven't lived yet.
Yeah, I don't know if I'd say that.
Is your 401k plan good or bad? This segment is for employees, but employers might be asking the same question. After all, a 401k is a tool for attracting and retaining great employees. Tom, let's say a business owner, a CFO, an HR professional feels their current 401k maybe isn't up to snuff. Reach out to you, talk about it.
Yeah, I mean, you need to ask yourself, you know, why are we offering this thing? What are we really trying to get out of it? I think for employees, when we talk about 401k plans, the one that you have is definitely better than nothing. I have not come across 401k plans where I'm like, oh my gosh, you'd be better off without this thing. Are there better plans than others? Absolutely. But when you're an employer looking to offer this to your employees, remember that it is an employee benefit and it has a purpose. Are you helping people prepare for retirement, getting them on more stable financial footing? And that's where all of the partners, I think Annex really plays a big role in that with our clients, of helping your employees maximize the benefit.
Tom Parks, Director of Retirement Plan Services, Annex, thank you.
Thank you, Danny.
Welcome back. This show, just about complete, we're on our last segment, is available as a podcast at the top of the hour. It's only a sample of what we do. Nobody wants to miss key details of the retirement and investment plan. But it happens. We can guide you. Start at annexwealth.com. I'm Danny Clayton in the studio. Dr. Brian Jacobson, Chief Economist at Annex Wealth Management. Dave Spano, our President and CEO.
Thanks, Danny. You know, in our private client, we work on these family-related issues a lot, and it's for the more complex issues that we work on. But there was a survey that went out of items that caused anxiety with the families. And really, you can go through a number of these ideas. But, you know, everything from how do I communicate to my next generation? How should my philanthropic strategy come into play? But there was a couple that were in the red, if you will. And let's just start at the bottom and really talk about the impact of wealth on my children's values. That was right up at the top.
It really was. I think, isn't the old saying about where it's was it like three generations as far as when you make the wealth and then when it gets spent again, you right. know, it's I think a really important conversation for parents to have is you don't want these trust fund babies, right. right? And how do you instill your values in your kids? Having those conversations, which are some of the things that we can help facilitate, right. you know, bringing the kids in for the conversations to know what's there and what the parents have done to earn that wealth. I think that's a key thing. It's not just about how do they want it spent, but how did they earn it to right. develop some sort of appreciation.
And for most families that we deal with, it's been hard work. It's been owning a business. It's been doing all the right things, but that leads right into estate planning, which mm-hmm. is one of those top concerns. And we are a firm, by the way, we talk about know the difference. You know the difference is who's on the team. And the estate planning team that we have on staff is one of those ways to know the difference and to go through and make sure that your investment plan and your estate plan and your tax plan are all talking to each other.
That's right. It's really at the intersection of those things. And I think too many people maybe just focus on investments as almost like a standalone consideration, but it does have to be at the intersection of those for the tax planning and the estate planning. If your investment planning isn't integrated into that, really, do you have a plan? Right, then it's not a coherent plan. The estate planning that we do as far as trying to figure out what's owned, how do you want it to pass, to whom, there's all sorts of technical considerations, lots of details that you can really overlook unless you're sitting down with a professional across the and on the same side of the table with you is what we do.
And on the third part of that is the investment planning piece, and that is what we spend a lot of time talking about because it's, you know, what people can relate to, but it's the full wealth management team that comes into place. And when you're assessing who you're going to work with, mm-hmm. looking at the depth of the team is very important. And that is one of the reasons why we talk about know the difference. It's not just one person selling a product. It is a deep team across many aspects.
Yeah, this is really a multifunctional team that we bring together for any problem that we're trying to solve. If you think about, there is a problem that clients are trying to solve, and it's not just an investment problem. It's a tax problem. It's an estate planning problem. Maybe it's a business problem that they're trying to solve as far as how to pass that on. And we bring together a wide variety of individuals to really try to come up with solutions. It's about defining the problem. That's the first thing to do, right? Define what is the problem you're trying to solve. Then you try to design a solution, and then you want to deliver on that particular outcome for the client. So it's really those three parts.
And delivering, Brian, is really about the experience, and that is really important. I know throughout our 8 branches this week, most of our conference rooms were full. Clients come in and going through those circumstances, looking at doing an interactive approach. And this happens all of the time. If this is something that makes sense to you and you want to go through that process, it's super easy to get started. It is a very low-key opportunity to get to know what you own, why you own it, and how much you're paying for it. Really, folks, you have to know the difference between financial advisors. There's some firms around that I would recommend other than our own, but there's a lot that you got to be careful for.
It's kind of nice when people walk in and they've got, you know, any number of issues. And Dave, not one of our clients is the same.
No, that's correct. Everyone's circumstances are different. And Brian, you know this very well. Everyone's facts and circumstances yep. are different. And that is the reason why we go through this process, Danny.
And folks, we're going to meet you where you're at. Annex Comprehensive Wealth is for folks that are actively planning. Maybe they're already in retirement. Annex Private Client, if you have complex needs and high net worth, boy, do we have the team to tackle your challenges. If you're just starting out, maybe you know somebody who's just starting out, maybe a recent college graduate, a young couple that wants to get pointed in the right direction, may I suggest Annex Ignite? It is a great place to start. No matter what, it starts at annexwealth.com. When you click that Get Started button, for investment and retirement planning, tax planning, and estate planning from a fee-only fiduciary on the doorstep of April. It's time. Listen to that inner voice that says it is time. Work with a fee-only fiduciary. Hey, if you're traveling this weekend to see friends and family, please be safe. Thanks for listening. See you next Saturday at 10. This is Money Talk, the Annex Wealth Management Show on 620 WTMJ.